You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the meeting grounds for spirituality and society, religion and culture.
Welcome to Expanding Horizons. Today's title is No Ball Skills. I'm Jenny Dyster, and I'm not devoid of ball skills. I played softball. Coralie, hello.
Hello, Jenny.
I've appropriated the phrase no ball skills from your writing, Coralie. Dear listener, be assured this is just our point of departure. We mean neither to denigrate ball skills nor to exalt them, but merely to question their value. Well, not just their value. Our values generally. Now tell me, Coralie, do you have any ball skills, that is?
I'm moderately endowed, but I have a different approach to the professionals. As the mother of three boys, I taught them to throw, catch and hit, and my aim was to enable them to give each other a game, confidence as well as skill building. I remember my astonishment when watching badminton finals at their school. The aim, of course, was victory. As much as possible, the competitors hit the shuttlecock so that it was unreturnable.
Yes, I guess that's where we all start. I have very clear memories of my father at Port Nalunga Beach hitting the tennis ball to me on beach bats courts in the hard sand, making sure the ball landed in exactly the right spot so I could get it back. And we celebrated long rallies. But of course, once skill level develops, the excitement comes from an ace, from returning the unreturnable. Or maybe watching international clay court finals to see who will prevail in the interminably long rallies.
Well, that's what professionals aim to do, and that is where the big prize comes in, the big check. Do you watch tennis?
Well, I used to. And there is a lot of pleasure to be gained from watching good ball skills. I think it was all the carry-on about disputed line calls and racket technology and finding out about the lifestyle of the tennis players. It kind of put me off.
It's very easy to sound like a killjoy when you criticise sport or sportsmen and women. It can be thrilling, and the sheer joy or grief of watching your team or your son or daughter win can link people together in a way we need. I've always enjoyed bike riding and bushwalking more than sport, but I love watching my sons play, and I have friends and relations who play a lot of sport. But they are bored and disappointed by aspects of professional sport and dead bored by the obsessive media coverage.
Quite. I know how peeved I get when the excellent arts programs on the ABC on Sunday afternoons get cancelled for the footy. But my big objection to professional sport is the money. I'm sure young men would have less bother with their egos and appetites if the rewards were less. And all the stakeholders, managers, parents, coaches and so on, would have less incentive to overlook rotten behaviour if sports success wasn't as lucrative. Why are the paychecks so damn big? Well, for AFL players, for example.
Well, it's what our society thinks they're worth. It's what we're prepared to pay them.
Until they mess up. But it has to be big time with some digital footage, sex and violence. Warney got away with a lot, didn't he, because he wasn't violent. Sharon's still totally enamoured. You know, Kim's friend in Kath and Kim.
Mm?
I can tell you don't. Mm. She's that overweight netballer played by Magda Szubanski. My point is, people will say of Shane things like, oh, he just can't help himself. They don't castigate him at length about the results of his behaviour on his wife and kids.
Violence is not tolerated like that, though. The young swimmer who got drunk and shattered another man's eye socket missed out on the Beijing Olympics. And now that he has a criminal conviction, the Swimming Federation is continuing to exclude him.
But if the violence is perpetrated on a woman, it is sometimes minimised. I recall comments about Nathan Buckley's punishment being harsh because his, quote, tiff with a girlfriend happened to be in public. The media focused on the damaged handbag, which is a rather underhand way of trivialising the offence.
But these controversies have raged on for a long time without reducing the pay packets of athletes and sportsmen. So spectators just don't care, do they?
Well, my spectator days are almost over. Not even Wimbledon keeps me awake. So what is it that makes grown men weep? What gets the masses to the footy? The teams aren't community-based, so people are not watching their brothers or sweethearts or their sons playing.
Well, it's a safe emotional outlet. Everybody accepts it. We've already agreed sports is fun, sports moments are spectacular and make great photo opportunities. Winning is fun. And when so many people like it, men and women, it makes for easy subject matter for conversations.
I should have thought it would be fraught. I mean, what about the allegiance of the participants?
Not a problem. It adds to the banter.
Oh, of course.
And sports talk is often stats. Men like numbers. Scoring is indisputable. 86 beats 85. It fits in nicely with targets and hunting skills. It's controlled aggression and infinitely preferable to war.
Mm. And reflected glory, I suppose, comes into it. Even the couch potatoes take some of the credit when their team wins.
That same effect happens outside sport too. Apparently, when John Kennedy was assassinated, many more people said that they had voted for him than actually could have done so.
I guess the phenomenon of wanting to take pride in the good shouldn't be sneezed at. Civil rights were advanced, weren't they, after Kennedy's demise?
Yes. Johnson continued along the civil rights path, but the people who jumped on the Kennedy bandwagon did not produce the change. Ordinary people who insisted on equal rights for black and white on buses and in schools, no matter what the opposition, they were the movers and shakers.
You're listening to Expanding Horizons on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. Today, Coralie and Jenny are questioning our choice of role models. So, our role models, Coralie, or whose role models?
We do seem to be hit in the face every day with images and talk of people I don't particularly admire. People all pretty much the same, in fact. They are either sports celebrities or movie celebrities, pop singers or sportsmen, or movie stars or sporting heroes. You noticed? When have you seen a doctor, a dentist, a builder, engineer or teacher on the front page or page 3 of the paper, except when accompanied by a lawyer and coming out of court?
Cringe, yes. Well, could it be that W.H. Auden's prophecy has come true? He wrote, "The new aristocracy will consist exclusively of hermits, bums and permanent invalids. The rough diamond, the consumptive whore, the bandit who's good to his mother, the epileptic girl who has a way with animals. They'll be the heroes and heroines of the new tragedy, when the general, the statesman and the philosopher have become the butt of every farce and satire."
He missed out people with good ball skills.
Dang and tarnation. Yes, he did. They're neither on the list that is or the list that should be admired. Auden also neglected your builder, engineer or teacher, if we're being strictly literal. But the general idea remains that heroes of the past were often leaders, not just followers, and especially not followers of fashion, unlike our current crop of celebrities.
In what context did Auden make this prophecy?
Well, it was in a Christmas oratorio called For the Time Being. Herod slaughtered all the male children in the hope of killing Jesus. And he justified it by saying that if he didn't knock off the new religion before it got started, then all the good civic Roman values would go to pot. He was especially concerned about justice. If pity were to replace justice as the cardinal human virtue, ordinary people would not fear retribution for their actions. Every corner boy will congratulate himself, "God came down in person to save me. It suits God to forgive sins, and it suits me to commit them." Really, the world is admirably arranged. It's a wonderfully conservative view of human nature, isn't it? People will only behave if you threaten them with retribution.
Or punishment. The Romans didn't separate religion and state, did they? The emperor was Pontifex Maximus, which is the title still used by the popes today.
Yes, I often forget that why the Roman Catholics are called the Roman Catholics. They really were Roman, weren't they? Getting back to Herod, presumably he saw the political expediency in linking social order, law and political power with religious belief. And therefore, alternative religious movements were a threat. But just listen to this. Auden continues Herod's ranting prophecy with these words, which I think suit today so well. diverted from its normal outlet in patriotism and civic or family pride, the need for the masses for some visible idol to worship will be driven into totally unsociable channels where no education can reach it. That's a pretty fair description of celebrity culture, also known as Who Magazine, Facebook, The Biggest Loser, and so on, isn't it? Channels where no education can reach it.
It's what makes the news so often trivial and uninspiring. But to complain about current norms won't change them, and it could smack of envy.
Envy? Surely not. Wealth, beauty, youth, ball skills. So when does our culture look at other stuff? Whom do we admire?
People who are truly courageous, people whose actions either save the lives of thousands or had an enduring impact for good. The people who dedicate their lives to the service of others rather than to personal success, wealth or fame. Can you think of a sports person who fills the bill, Jenny?
Nor a movie star. Yes, good old Aussie values by the bootful, John Landy, a living treasure.
Tell me more. I know John Landy was a great athlete and a naturalist who became the governor of Victoria a few years ago. What else?
Well, a recent trip to Melbourne refreshed my memory. There's a statue of Landy called Sportsmanship across the road from Melbourne's Olympic Park. It depicts a moment in the 1956 Australian Mile Championship. Underneath is a bronze reproduction of Harry Gordon. I think it was Sun Herald.
Mm-hmm.
He said this was Landy's greatest triumph. And in 1999, the Sports Hall of Fame, it's voted Australia's finest sporting moment that's in the 20th century.
Really? What happened, Jen?
Well, the race was on and a young, soon-to-be great champion was also competing. It was Ron Clark. He crashed down when he clipped another competitor's heel, and Landy was very close behind, leaped desperately to clear Clark's body, but he didn't quite manage it. The spikes caught the inside of Clark's arm.
Oh.
Yes, well, watched by 22,000 people, Clark pulled up and the other runners streamed past, and Landy trotted back to Clark, who was still on the ground, to see how badly hurt he was, and he apologised. Well, Clark was okay and he urged Landy to chase the field of runners that had gone way, way past. He had about a lap and a half to go and amazingly he won the race. His act of chivalry cost him a world record. He probably lost about 7 seconds, it's been estimated. His time was 4 minutes and 2 seconds. It was round about the time the 4 minute mile was the big news, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
And he had run it under before, but he would have that time, obviously.
I see. Like the Anzacs, chivalrous, sacrificing his chance of a world record to help a fallen rival, then pushing on and winning the race anyway. What did the journalist at the time write, the stuff on the statue?
He said that many people wondered why Landy did it. Landy himself got a bit sick of the focus on this snapshot of his athletic career, but Harry Gordon, the journalist, reckoned Landy just didn't think. It was the instinctive action of a man whose mate's in trouble. Generous, selfless, courageous, whether on the battlefield, in the surf or during bushfires. These are the qualities Australians admire most, what many people call mateship and what's commemorated on Anzac Day.
So it's fitting that Landy's most recent appointment, although he's now nearly 80 years old, is to chair the Bushfire Relief Fund in Victoria.
Yeah. Landy's contribution to our lives has been lifelong. It was athletics first and the high civic roles last, but in the middle, his professional life was concerned with agriculture, and he was especially involved in research and development for over a decade, family farms being the special focus.
I have a book written and illustrated by Landy called Close to Nature. It's a diary of a year in the bush, and he was a superb photographer as well as a meticulous observer of insects and the seasons. He constantly relates the relationship between life on the farm to what was happening in the bush.
When was that published?
Oh, good heavens, Jenny. Is that a fair question? It would have been sometime in the 1980s.
I didn't really expect the exact year. I keep a diary of everything that I've read, and I always put down the dates, and I'm a bit obsessed. As a girl, though, I grew up in the country and I'm well aware of how environmental awareness took off in the 80s, there were farmers planting trees in the mid-north in particular, and they really began to examine soil conditioning with long-term structure instead of just thinking about crop yield. So Landy was pretty outstanding, wasn't he? But with history off the record except for Anzac Day, I suspect his example excites the admiration of the baby boomers and those a little older. But what about Generation X or Generation Y? Who would they know about?
They would know about Weary Dunlop and maybe even Sister Bullwinkle, who survived imprisonment by the Japanese. But these are historical examples, and as you have indicated, these stories are reflected upon on or around one day of the year, Anzac Day. The other day that we honour achievement rather than celebrity is Australia Day. In 2005, Fiona Wood was named Australian of the Year.
Yes, and she's also been called a living treasure. I'm not quite sure how that voting works, but it's an official title now, isn't it? Living treasure.
Mm.
Right now she's in the news because of the refugee boat that went up in flames. She manages a burns unit in, it's Perth, isn't it?
Yes. Amongst other things, she was Western Australia's only woman plastic surgeon, and she was determined to find out how to reduce scarring after burns, because to her, scars were not just about appearance. They affect how you move and how you function. She developed spray-on skin, which is a technique of spraying skin cells cultured from the patient's own skin directly onto the burn. It used to take weeks to culture new skin, and now that time is just 5 days.
Well, that must be hugely beneficial in reducing the opportunity for infection too.
Yes. I imagine most people heard about it for the first time in 2002, at the time of the Bali bombing. She coordinated the treatment of 25 or so young people, all victims from the Sari Club. The team of about 60 worked for 5 days without a break at one stage, and this feat is made all the more remarkable by the fact that Fiona Wood is the mother of 6 children.
Oh yeah, this is superwoman stuff. I remember watching a program with George Negus in which he said the media coverage was actually helpful in this regard, as the kids could see that their mum was part of a significant event. So complaining about not having clean socks wasn't a good idea.
I suppose the interviewer asked her how she managed to balance her work and her family life.
Yes, well, no female celebrity escapes that line of questioning. Men get asked, what does your family mean to you? The whole program was based around that. An on-screen clock took you through her day, starting with her working out at the gym at 5:30 in the morning, having already made up the lunch boxes and dropped the kids off. You then saw her pick them up from swimming training and drop them off and then get on with surgeries at 2 Perth hospitals. And the need for the gym becomes obvious there because the temperature in the operating theatres has to be 36 degrees to protect the patients. Mm. Anyway, you see her pick up her eldest boy sometime after 3 on her way to yet another shift. The interviewer asked her which took more energy, being a mother or being a surgeon.
And did she say being a mother?
Yeah, got it in one. But here she was managing all that, plus running a tissue culture company that employed 20 or so people, and I bet that's grown since. Fiona Wood sees that the goal for burns units is scar-free healing, so in her own words, there's an awful lot more work to do.
It is interesting that to know who is admired and how the question is asked is probably influential. The Reader's Digest conducts a poll on the most trusted Australian.
Well, that would rule out a lot of talented but flaky characters, wouldn't it?
I can't say I follow the polls, but this is where the internet comes in handy. In 2005, 2006 and 2007, it was Fiona Wood.
And in 2008, because of Reader's Digest in the laundromat, I know it was 2008 as well.
Oh, really? Okay.
Service perhaps sounds dull to young people of the celebrity age, yet people recognised for their lives of service seem to have thoroughly enjoyed life. Fred Hollows was such a feisty, no-nonsense guy.
As New Zealanders tend to be. A rugby player, a man who got into medicine and then into ophthalmology, almost by accident, and not because he was striving for the social status or money that seems to motivate clever young people to medicine today.
I suspect those motives always have been powerful. It's just that we remember individuals who get beyond that level and do something about the conditions that produce awful suffering. But getting back to Fred Hollows, he did work brilliantly in Aboriginal communities and then in Vietnam, Nepal and Ethiopia because he was connected with people on a human level, reacting to smiles and emotions. He wasn't just the face behind the equipment looking into people's eyes. Are not the eyes the windows of the soul?
Oh, I don't know whether or not Fred Hollows believed in souls. He saw the tragedy of poor people losing their sight because of something he could easily fix. And he obviously connected with poor people as a young doctor working in London in the bleak 1950s. He couldn't stand the idea of using people to climb the professional ladder. His motto was, no survey without service. This meant that he would not study or survey people without giving them the results so that they could benefit.
I like that motto, no survey without service. I think we can see that it has become expected practice for researchers, whether they're in medicine or other fields such as anthropology. Even market researchers can come in for criticism for exploitation nowadays. It's not to say that all researchers follow the maxim, but at least the ideal's out there, and it can be appealed to or cited, which is why we need some role models like Fred. Role models, do you think we should go back to the term heroes? Words can be wrecked by inappropriate use.
There are anti-heroes as well as heroes. You used the new term national treasure earlier, which has the advantage of being as easy to apply to women as to men. I don't think it matters much what we call our famous people. What does matter is that we continue to admire real achievements and people who are truly courageous, people whose actions either save the lives of thousands or have an enduring impact for good. I hear humour in the character of my heroes and heroines, humour that seems to keep them gurgling along and also makes them so well liked by the people they help and who in turn help them. I hear humour and I hear enjoyment. They are not people who theorise about altruism or weigh personal sacrifice or risk on a scale against public good. I think these people are like the original Samaritan. They see human need and step forward to help. Walking by on the other side of the road, averting their faces at injustice and suffering, is intolerable to them. They have to do something. Be true to themselves. Live with themselves. Honour, integrity and decency, married to compassion and opportunity.
And to that end, we'll return to the idea of North Sea Day, entitled The Gospel Project, and play you the track Thou Shalt. So it's goodbye today from Jenny Dyster and guest Coralie Creevy. Expanding Horizons is produced by South Australian Unitarians. Radio Adelaide is a community radio station devoted to diversity. Ring 8303 5000 if your subscription is due or if you are thinking of subscribing for the first time. Apart from the wide range of programs you will be supporting, there is a handsome prize each month for subscribers. Happy listening. On Campus is coming up next.
That's our episode of Expanding Horizons for the week. The introduction is a piece named Elements by the artist CDK. The piece is licensed under Creative Commons and can be found from a link on our media website. And be sure to visit our media website, unitariansa.wordpress.com. This is White Rabbit, out.